Hey, what's up? This is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 36 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast.
And in this episode, I talked to Ray Lampe, also known as Dr. Barbecue. You've seen him on TV before. He's been all over the Food Network, all over food TV in general. He has written 9 cookbooks. Yes, 9. He has a 10th one on the way. He's been doing this since the 80s. We talk about the early days of competition barbecue, the barbecue scene. It's fascinating. He tells amazing stories. I don't want to go on too much right now because there's a lot to hear. He's a wealth of knowledge. He has a restaurant coming up in Florida. He talks about that at the very end. I know you're gonna love it. He's a great guy. It's kind of a two-parter. We did it one day. His internet got kind of screwy at the end, and then so we jumped in to do a second part. And I know you're gonna love it.
And if you like what you're hearing, please subscribe. That way you'll be able to catch all the episodes. I'll be doing at least 2 to 3 per week. And then also on a lot of networks, a lot of podcast networks, you have to subscribe to get the back episodes. There are now 36 of them, so I would hope that you get a chance to listen to them all. I have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints with a lot of the actual interviews, person-to-person interviews, which are cool to watch, as well as visits to barbecue joints and wood piles and much more. Thanks so much. Enjoy. Well, good morning, Ray.
Hey, Kevin.
How are you doing today?
So far, so good. You know, it's morning. It's early. Of course, I'm not as early as you, but it's still morning here, Monday morning.
Definitely. Like you said, it's a holiday, so it feels a little different than most days.
Yeah, well, but every day in my life, it feels a little different than most days, you know, because I don't have a job. I have a job, but I don't get up on Monday morning and try to work. I do, but nobody's telling me I need to be there at 9 o'clock. Now, I may have to work next Sunday, but it doesn't matter.
That's true.
I lose track of days, really, I do, and Sandy doesn't work. So we lose track sometimes. It's a Tuesday and it's a busy day and Sunday is nothing to do, or it's the other way around.
And there's something to be said about that. Like on Monday, you don't have to get those numbers in. You don't think of that specific spreadsheet or do that 10 o'clock meeting that you have to.
Yeah, well, you know, you say that, but one of the keys to being self-employed is self-motivation.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know, that's the, if you can't kick yourself in the ass to get to work Monday morning, then you shouldn't be self-employed because then you need somebody accounting for you.
That is true. Yeah, it takes a certain type of person to be able to maintain that on a long-term basis.
That's for sure. I'll jump right into it. I think, you know, I've had some good success in barbecue, and I think it's mainly because of my smart business sense and work ethic, because, you know, I know a lot of guys know how to cook. That's kind of the easy part at this point. Now, you know, back in the day, we were creating and groundbreaking and kind of making some of this stuff up. But still, I think the managing the business aspect of it is the good part. I tell guys all the time, everybody wants me to try their barbecue sauce. And you know, I can't help you even if I like it. And I generally don't like barbecue sauce. I like barbecue meat. I don't like the sauce that much. And I always tell guys, don't worry about me tasting it. I guarantee you it's good enough if you do everything else right.
That's true.
You know, you didn't bring it here because it sucks. It's probably pretty good. And it may be unique. It may be the same as all those others. It doesn't really matter. If you do all that other stuff right, marketing and a nice label and a nice jar, it doesn't matter how good it is.
Yeah, and getting it in front of the people that are purchasing it, not necessarily getting it in front of you, who need to get it out to distributors. They need to get it out to stores.
Yeah, that's true. I really can't help you. I guess I could. I don't get it much lately anymore, but I used to get a lot of, you know, somehow he's going to cut me in as a partner if I will be the free endorser of that product. And, you know, believe me, I worked really hard to get myself past that level to where you actually do write me a check to work for your product. So it's pretty unlikely I'm going to, but you know, I love guys like that because they have the passion for their product. They like it so much. There's a new guy here in Tampa right now, Sarah Sauce, C-E-R-R-A. Okay. And he's like, I haven't met a guy like this in a while. He just loves this sauce. He loves making it. His friends love it. Just convinced that it's that good. And it is. It's pretty good. It's, you know, that's not the thing. He's going to have to do all the other stuff right too. But I love that passion.
But it does start with passion. If you don't have that passion, if you're just doing it for the money, or you think that this is a great way to get in and make a quick buck, that's not going to happen, especially in the barbecue business. People see through that.
Yeah, I have a great story, though. The big sauce producer in Chicago that I used to deal with, and a couple different events, a couple different projects. And he said one day, I was weird to having a conversation like this, and he's seen everything, you know. And he said, a guy came to him one day and said, "Hey, can you make me a sauce that tastes just like Casey Masterpiece?" And he said, "Sure, I can." And he said, "Okay, that's what I want. I'll worry about making the labeling and the marketing of it." You know, that probably ended up being a success.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I bet you that's not the first conversation that someone said, "I want it to taste like Casey Masterpiece."
Yeah, but you know, what the heck? There's a whole lot of that getting bought.
Oh yeah, for sure. So when you got started, you were in the trucking business, right?
Yeah, family trucking business. I was in high school, and my father had a couple of trucks, local cartage around Chicago. Been in the family since literally the 30s. I've got the original paperwork
Oh,
that
that's so cool.
my grandfather bought to haul things in the 1930s. I mean, think about that. Think about what the trucks looked like.
And the nature of the business and the roads and
Well, I think they were hauling stuff with horse and wagon, you know. There were a few old pictures around in the family. So it was the family business, and my father was doing it, but he didn't love it. And he loved it. He didn't think it was a good idea for me, I think, for whatever reason. It was ups and downs. It's you know, being an entrepreneur, man, is, I always joke, you have good decades and bad decades,
Yeah,
and
that's
it's
very
true,
true.
you know, no matter what your business is. And he knew that, and I don't think he wanted me to do that. So I was in high school. I wasn't heading to the family business. I was working at the grocery store and thinking about going to Wyoming Tech to be a diesel mechanic. Anyway, I get
Interesting.
out of high school a month. My father dies. It's the trucking business is there in front of me, and so I have to jump in it to for the family. But it was, you know, it was fun. I enjoyed it. It was interesting. He didn't want me to go into it, but I did it for 25 years successfully,
Oh,
and I
wow.
enjoyed every minute of it. Well, I shouldn't say that. I always joke that I enjoyed the first 23 years was great. The 24th one was so-so. 25th one kind of sucked, and then I got out of there. So it wasn't terrible. As careers go, I'll take that, you know?
Yeah, that's not too bad.
But it really just ran its course. It was local trucking cartage in Chicago. So, and it was with a railway car parts company that was based in Chicago. All the little manufacturers were in Chicago of the parts they used, little machine shops and plating companies and stuff. That's just all gone. It's just not there anymore. Coupled with the fact that if you have a box that you need to get across town or across the world, you don't call, where's that phone number for Ray's Cartage? You call UPS or FedEx or something. So it just was a dying concept. And I hadn't done anything to send it in a different direction. I've got friends that were in similar businesses that are still there. But for me, it just was not, I didn't love that. It was going away, and I was okay with it. And I just found myself in the middle of my life that with something different to do, and an opportunity. I didn't have a family, so it, you know, it was a good career. I loved doing it, and that's what the wristwatch is about. It was the, you know,
Oh,
career
that's so cool.
changing, sort of a retirement watch from that career, because I have no regrets. I enjoyed doing it. It was just over, you know. And luckily, I talk about the business acumen and the entrepreneur mentality. The real key was realizing it was over and having the balls to say, you know, I'm sorry, this is done. I got to move on.
Yeah, a
I
lot of people
closed my
don't do that.
grandfather's business, man. That's kind of a drag, but I knew it was the right thing to do. And you know, it didn't look good for a long time. It looks, you know, now I look like a genius, but there were some stretches in there where it wasn't so good. But I, you know, it's who I was. And
Barbecuing on the side, or were you grilling on the
I was.
side, or?
Well, I started cooking in high school. I just we were just it was the 70s, early 70s, and we were just starting to have these progressive kind of high school programs where I lived anyway, so we could take some elective classes, and we were just stoners in the 70s, so food sounded pretty good to
Oh,
me.
yeah.
You know, we would cook something and we'd get to eat it. So that was really and there would be girls in the class. I knew that. So I was like, well, this is, you know,
Perfect.
what the hell? Why not? And so that's really why we took the foods class, me and a few of my friends. Well, I really liked to cook from day one. And actually, one of the other guys that was with us there still does cook occasionally, but did get, go forward with learning how to cook in his life. But it was just a thing to do, a thing for fun. But I enjoyed the cooking. We learned to make like blueberry muffins and crab meat quiche. I learned to make an apple pie.
That's great to have in your back pocket to have that.
Yeah, it was. I mean, from 15 years old on, I did cook those things, you know, and little by little, I spread my wings. And then as I got out, you know, was working at 18 years old, I had my job, a good job. And so I either needed to learn how to cook or eat pizza every day. And I didn't really like eating pizza every day. And so I learned how to cook a little further. I would take it the next step and learn how to cook this and that. But barbecue was never my thing. Okay. Till in 1982, a friend of mine, so I guess I was 25 years old, a friend of mine signed us up for the Mike Royko rib cooking contest. Mike Royko was the newspaper columnist in the Chicago Tribune or the Times. He bounced back and forth, but, and he had this argument with his neighbor who cooked the better ribs. So they're going to do it at the big park, and they made a big event out of it. Well, 400 people showed up to cook ribs that day in the park. Everybody got a 10 by 10 area. Now this is 1982. We didn't have the internet to communicate. You sent a letter in, literally, to sign up for it and hope they sent you the letter back that you were in. And then you went and got a 10 by 10 square. We didn't have easy ups. We were standing out there in the sun with a cooler of beer. I borrowed a Weber kettle
to cook this
contest. And the guy who came in second that day, the guy who came in first, a guy named Charlie Robinson, who has built a nice business in Chicago. His sauces are everywhere. He's still got a few restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
Charlie has had a really nice run. And the guy that came in second that day was Dave Raymond and his brother Larry from Sweet Baby Ray.
Of course.
And they took that finish that day and parlayed it into Sweet Baby Ray's. Now, I didn't know them guys then. I met Dave, you know, 10 years ago. But it's funny. We started our barbecue careers the same day.
That's amazing. That's an incredible story.
Yeah, it really is. And so for me, it was just, then it became my fun thing to do. But I had a successful family business, you know, I still did it for another 20 years after that. So I really wasn't looking for a new career. It just was my hobby. Now, little by little, that was 1982. So once a year, I would go do that event.
Okay.
And I would cook ribs off and on throughout the year, kind of practicing, but it was kind of becoming my thing that I was the rib cooking guy. My buddy made me a big grill out of a drum. And then another time we had an old toolbox off the back of a pickup truck that he turned into a grill. And because you couldn't buy, you know, you couldn't buy anything big back then. The only thing you could buy that I was aware of big was Weber was making the, whatever they call the big one, the ranch kettle.
Oh, the ranch one.
But it was like $1,000. I didn't have $1,000 to buy. You'd buy that thing. So it just, then barbecue became my thing. And in 1991, I got a message that they were not going to have the Mike Royko thing anymore. Mike had moved on and somebody else was doing it. And it's just amazing. A lot of my life has been like this. In the food section of the newspaper, Chicago paper, there was a little blurb that said something about the Illinois State Barbecue Championship. So I figured, okay, this is perfect. So I called the guy, and it was a half hour from my house or whatever. And I went there, signed up, and went, and it was a KCBS contest.
Oh, wow.
So 1991, I didn't know about KCBS. Again, we forget what life was like before the internet.
Yeah.
And so I went to this thing, and I didn't know back then the categories were poultry, pork, brisket, I think was a category, and ribs, of course.
Okay.
But poultry could be anything. So I cooked a turkey. And my first KCBS contest, I got the trophies right over there in 1991. I came in third. I had never won anything in the Mike Royko thing, but we always went and had fun. But
you cook a full turkey or is a turkey breast? What's that? A full turkey or a turkey breast?
Yeah, whole turkey. There's pictures of it around somewhere. I had, at that point, I had upgraded to Kingsford was branding that oval, like egg-shaped grill. It was kind of like a kettle. I think they're still around. I don't know where they make them, but it's had a few different names. But anyway, I had one of those because I always liked to cook this turkey, and it was my thing. I injected it with sherry and butter, cheap, you know, sherry out of the bottle and melted butter. I would inject it with that and cook it with a bunch of hickory chips, probably too many. But that oval grill was good for the turkey because I could put the fire way on the ends and the turkey in the middle. So that was like it had become my thing. So I was perfect for that. And I came in third. I got third place, and that was the first barbecue trophy I ever won, and I just was hooked. But what I learned that day was that you were supposed to cook all four categories. I didn't know. I thought I was supposed to pick one. I didn't
know any
better. And I met Carolyn Wells that day, and joined KCBS. I guess I probably mailed in my application a couple of days later, and I've been a KCBS member since 91. So that's, then it got serious from there on. Funny, a guy jumped on one of my Facebook posts the other day, a guy named Jim Loshy, that was cooking next to me then.
Okay.
And, I still stay in touch with him. So, and the guy on the other side of me, I haven't seen him in many years. I don't know what happened to him, but he had a drum, a 55-gallon drum upright, which you didn't see a lot back then. Which now is all the rage. But he had a door inside. He didn't drop the stuff in. He had a door on the side of it. I always remember that.
After that, did you start cooking all the categories, or were you?
Yeah, of course, right. Then I figured it out. I probably still cooked that turkey for a while till they changed the rules. But and we also, at that contest, we used to cook pork loin, bone-in pork loin.
Bone-in pork loin, wow.
That's what the guy there, Jim Burns, he stayed involved with barbecue for a while, but he's not anymore. That's what he liked to cook. He had a restaurant where we had the cook-off in his parking lot, and he liked to cook bone-in pork loin. So that was the category, because we didn't have these specified categories back then. Brisket was always a category, probably just because it came from KCBS, which in Kansas City, brisket was what they cooked. Pork, they didn't really, there was no definition of barbecue pork in Kansas City. It could be whatever it was. And same with poultry. I mean, they like to cook turkey in Kansas City. So that's probably why it was just left loose like that. So think about what I'm saying, though. This is 1991. After that, Gary Wells was a friend of mine, a good friend. It became serious then that we had to make these categories. My member number at KCBS is 943. Which unless you go to the Jack Daniels, that's a really low number. When you go, and my judging number is 738, I think.
Wow.
When you go to the Jack, there's judge number 10.
That's true. There probably
it's
is.
Kind of amazing, actually.
But at that time, did you go around to different contests outside of your state, or were you just staying inside Illinois?
Yeah, you had to, because there was no other ones. Mm-hmm. At first couple of years, I guess we probably just did that one. But then we wanted to do some more, but they just didn't exist, certainly in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to be involved, for me, it was like a 7.5-hour drive to Kansas City. So I would do that regularly to judge or cook in a contest or just go hang around or even just go eat in the barbecue restaurant.
Yeah, I was going to ask, did you go down there just to eat barbecue?
I did because brisket was not a thing, in Chicago. You could find some ribs. You could probably find some pork. Again, pork was a pretty loose category. Mm-hmm. Chicken, of course, is easy. But brisket was the killer. I would drive there to eat brisket in the restaurants because I just didn't know what a real brisket was supposed to be like. And frankly, you couldn't buy it in a store. It just was, it just
it
didn't
wasn't common.
Exist. No, it wasn't. So I would do that a lot. And that's where the contests were. Then little by little, again, no internet. I'm scratching to try and find out. I signed up for National Barbecue News, the Goat Gap Gazette. I don't know if that even still exists.
I don't think that's it does. An old one.
And then the KCBS bullsheet. I mean, back then, you kind of laugh about it when it shows up to your house now. Back then, man, you couldn't wait because,
it was exciting.
That was where you got the information. So we would go wherever we could. There was a contest started I remember I went and cooked in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. It was a Memphis in May contest. But there was no other contest, so we didn't know that it was that different, really, or what the difference was. So we went over there and got our ass kicked by Mike Mills and Pat Burke. They were at the top of their game, so it had to be 93 or so. They won all three categories and just spanked everybody. I learned my lesson about Memphis in May. And then there was I'd go to Barbecue Lasso, which was the big contest in Des Moines.
Okay.
So that was a little closer to me. In the early days, it was unsanctioned. I mean, this is, it was all just kind of forming at that time. That's why I often say I'm one of the original guys, because that's what it was. Yeah, I am. I mean, it was really just coming together. I don't take a lot of credit for it. Really, the guy that should get all the credit is Gary Wells. Gary, we left us too soon. But Gary, everybody forgets about Gary. He was the guy really kind of driving the bus and frankly paying the bills, because there was no money in it at that point. Gary had an insurance office, so he let us He let KCBS use part of his own insurance office to have an office.
This is so interesting. I didn't know that that you were at the forefront of the whole thing. It just seems like, and that you were part of that groundswell, because a lot of people now take it for granted, I think.
Yeah, well, you're right about that. I was part of the groundswell. I was not a decision maker. I wasn't I wasn't that involved, but I was one of the guys. You know, it was because of guys like me that it was happening,
yeah, the
because
early
we were
days.
all interested in it. There was a core of people, and Gary and Carolyn get all the credit in the world
For
that,
sure.
you know, they were driving the bus at that point, and without them, I don't know. It might have happened anyway because somehow there was a demand for it, but they certainly, you know, deserve a lot of credit. So little by little, contests would pop up. You know, they're the Carbondale, Illinois, way down in the tip of Illinois, there was a contest there. So we would go down there. Ohio, I used to go. I've got plaques on my wall from there's one from, you know, from Ohio, because it was a 6 hour drive, and there was no other reason to go there, but it was the only place to go to a cook off. And but what would happen back then, so I would go to Ohio and meet a bunch of people from Ohio, and we went one time to Delaware. Why Delaware? I don't know. There was a contest there with like $10,000 in prize money. And I lived in Chicago. I mean, it wasn't like it was in the neighborhood.
No.
So we drove there. And I mean, this is what we were doing back then. And that day I met Bill Milroy from Texas, who's still involved, the Texas River Rangers. I met Jim Tabb that day. I met, there was a bunch of East Coast guys. I forget. There was a whole bunch of people I met that day that really have become influencers in the world of barbecue. And it was the first time I ever saw there a whole bunch of caterers showed up with Southern Prides and Old Hickories. And all of a sudden we had this issue of guys wanting to cook with their gas turned on because they didn't know how to cook without it, because they didn't know any better. I mean, it was just all so new back then. So yeah, groundswell is the right way to say it. I was certainly part of that. And we were Mike Lake as well. Mike Lake and I became good friends up in the Chicago area. And so we would KCBS banquet, which they just had the other day. It was a local thing. It was a potluck at a Shriners Hall or something. I mean, it'd be 50 people. So Mike and I would come from Chicago, and they were surprised we were coming. You know, what is the guys from Chicago bothering to come here for? And I always remember Debbie and Bob Pelt, who I don't think are involved at all anymore, from Memphis. They would come. And you know, so all little by little, people were coming from out of town and joining on this thing. And a lot of it, you know, some people were welcoming us. Some didn't really think it was, they didn't like it necessarily because it had been such a local thing.
A local thing, yeah.
But so then there was a cook-off one time. I'm probably getting this stuff out of order, but whatever.
That's okay. No, this is really interesting to me.
There was on Easter Sunday, Arlie Bragg put together, I didn't know Arlie from Adam. I mean, this was his first event. He puts together a barbecue cook-off, and again, with 10,000 in prize money. And I was I was one of the good cooks at the time. So if there was 10 grand somewhere, I was driving.
Yeah.
And it was in Nashville, a place called Nashville Shores. It was they had an amusement park kind of water park, I think it was, and a campground. It was the first time I ever went to a contest at a campground, and it was great. And cooking next to me was Kerry Bringle, who's Peg Leg Pork in Nashville. And Kerry and his guys, and I always remember, we always laugh about this. Jerry Springer was a big deal. And Kerry and his guys, they were partying like crazy. But they would stop the whole party to watch Jerry Springer in the middle of the event because they were big fans.
Well, especially if you're drinking, it's got to be funny to watch.
Oh, they were. Yeah, believe me. I don't know if you know Kerry. He's a fun dude.
So were you, Dr. Barbecue back then, or what was your name of your team?
Bone Smokers was always the name of my team. That was the these days I use Dr. Barbecue just to avoid confusion. But Bone Smokers, my buddy John Petiti, he's in Phoenix now. He was my cooking partner back then. But it was weird. Like so many guys I see, even now, you know, you pair up and you got a team put together, but one guy is just way more into it than the others. And I was that guy. So John hung with me for a while, but him and his buddy came up with the name for our team. They used to install soda equipment, and they were at the water tower place in Chicago, the fancy high dollar mall, and riding around. And there's all kinds of beautiful women there. And their standard joke between them was, yeah, she looks like a bone smoker, or she doesn't look like a bone smoker. So we're looking for a name for our team. And we're like, Bone Smokers, it's perfect. So So I used that for years and really still do. It's actually on my American Express card is right here somewhere. And Bonesmokers is my corporate name on
Oh
my
wow.
American Express card.
Still to this day.
But the Dr. Barbecue thing was really just coincidence. I was really getting into it. So it was like, I think it was 92 or 93. I bought a new van, an Astro van to haul stuff around. I had like the an a small offset, and I bought one of those trailer hitch haulers so I could haul this offset on just on the back of my van. It wasn't a trailer, but I could haul this offset around. I think I had a Weber kettle that I would haul inside my van as well and go to cook-offs. And Illinois had never allowed vanity license plates. We were always jealous of you California guys because you could get, I'm really cool on your plate and stuff. And we couldn't get that. And finally, they decided to allow it. And I sent in again, it was a postcard. I sent in this postcard, and you had to pick three choices. And I really don't remember if Dr. Barbecue was my first choice. I don't know who else would have asked for that, or Mr. Barbecue, Barbecue Guy. I don't remember. It was, I put three things down there, and they sent me to Dr. Barbecue Plate. Not really, it wasn't like some great marketing genius idea. They sent me the license plate, and I stuck it on my van, and it was
How
just
funny
kind
is
of a joke.
that?
And little by little, people started calling me that. It wasn't really even the thought at the time, It was just kind of a fun license plate to put on my van.
So when you decided that it was your 25th year and you were not enjoying the trucking business, did you think I'm going into barbecue or I'm going to go into something completely up?
It was the only other thing I knew how to do, really. I mean, I had the passion for it, like all these guys now. Everybody wants to quit their job and become a barbecue guy. I mean, I had thoughts like that. I'm not going to say I didn't, but I knew better. But it was really the only other thing I knew how to do. I was 43 years old, and I had two things I knew how to do was be a Chicago truck driver, which was, I could have took a job with somebody, but it wasn't going to be the same lifestyle I was used to. I mean, I did well in that business, and all of a sudden I was going to cut my pay by two thirds, and I just didn't want to do that. So barbecue was the obvious choice.
Did you have sponsorships at all at that time, or were you
No,
looking at?
gosh, no. We all dreamt of it. I tell people now I think we really thought, and I guess I'm speaking for everybody, but we really thought we were going to end up like NASCAR, where I would be the light beer guy and you would be the Tide guy, and we would roll around from town to town. And honestly, I still think that might happen. I think
That's
it's
not
going to
far
take a
from what it could be,
whole.
yeah.
Yeah, it's going to take a whole fresh start, though. It's not going to, what we're doing now, I don't think can evolve into that. It's just a little too gone into its niche. But I still think that we may see that one of these days. I'm not working on it. I don't know anybody that is, but I still do. But anyway, that's what we thought was going to happen. We weren't thinking about we were going to find a meat sponsor and all of this. The guys around Kansas City did. You would see a guy it's very similar still, I think, there now. McGonagall's and what's that other those meat guys? They would give a guy a free brisket to hang a sign up, so everybody would go to his butcher shop. Or you get the local beer guy to give you some free beer and you hang a sign up. It wasn't like it wasn't real sponsorship, the kind of money we actually can figure out how to get now. It was just a hobby. It really was. But so my first thought was, okay, I should open a barbecue restaurant. That's what the natural
That's
thing that you
logical,
think.
yeah.
Yeah, and but I knew better. I had it's funny I look back at it now if I was really as clear on it as I say it, but I knew I had a nest egg. Okay, I was not I had had a successful career, but I was in the middle of my life, so I had a pile of money, and I had one shot with it basically. So I knew if I put it all into a restaurant, it didn't work. I was going to be broke, because you don't get none of, you don't get to take the equipment with, you
Oh,
don't,
it's over.
you just end up screwed with a bunch of money on the table you owe somebody else when you run out of money. So I was just scared of that. I really didn't want to do that.
That's
So
frightening.
what, yeah, it, to me it was. Now, a lot of people, I guess I should have been thinking I'm going to kill it and get rich doing this restaurant, but that was not the thinking I had. It's funny though. Are you familiar with Uncle Bub's, Mark Link in Chicago? Well, I actually looked at the same restaurant Mark ended up buying. It was a gyro stand in Westmont, and it was available. And my buddy and I walked through there to look at it about maybe doing a barbecue restaurant there. And I looked at it and I thought, it's just too different. And I was scared when it came down to it. I looked at one up in Wisconsin where I had a summer home too, and it was actually a perfect fit. And I was like, I got scared. I was like, no, this is not going to work for me. So I moved on, and Mark ended up doing that. And now he's expanded it. He owns half the block, and he's doing really well. And we're friends. I mean, I tell him that story. So I was really, you know, my business mentality was that the restaurant was too risky. So what I did was I bought I knew barbecue was something. I knew there was a lot going on. I thought maybe I could figure it out. So I bought a concession trailer, a 20-footer that was, you know, legal for everybody. I had an opportunity to get some good brand new equipment that exactly what I wanted in there. And I built, you know, one of the first killer barbecue trailers, spec'd exactly like I wanted it. And I put my house up for sale, and I moved to Florida. Literally, like 12 days after I parked the truck, 12 days later, I was in Florida with this concession trailer.
Wow.
I'd gone down to Lakeland for the barbecue cook-off a bunch of times. It was like a thing to do. You live in Chicago, go down to Lakeland in January, and, you know, it was warm. So I thought, well, I don't know. Those are nice people there. They like barbecue, and it's kind of redneck enough that they'll probably let me sell barbecue in a parking lot somewhere. So I'm just going to go there. I mean, I don't know what I was thinking. My friends thought I was nuts. I was 43 years old and I grew up in a place where everybody kind of went into family business or a similar business, and you had a career and you moved to the suburbs, and you know, it was a very normal life. And I'd been doing that till I was 43, and all of a sudden I said, well, listen, I'm going to Florida to sell barbecue in the parking lot. My friends thought I was nuts.
And what type of barbecue were you selling?
I cooked a lot of pulled pork and ribs and chicken occasionally, but it was mostly pulled pork sandwiches. Florida, it's all changing fast now, but Florida at that time was a pork, you know, it's really just South Georgia, middle of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pork butts was really what it was all about.
Were you selling this online just at events, or were you doing it on like a 3-4 days a week? Or
well, my original concept was I was going to sell it on the road for say 7-8 months of the year, and then head out for the summer and just do cook-offs or I was set up so that I could do some vending at events. And back then I was so well connected that I got a spot at Tryon, which was a big vending opportunity then. And it was a new one up in Virginia, in Danville, Virginia, that I was able to get into. And, you know, I had doors open for me to do the vending during the summer. The problem was the snowbird season down here doesn't last nearly as long as you think it does.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, okay, I'll show up and I'll come home after the Jack in November, and I'll sell barbecue at home till like May. Back then, that was like the season, you know. Mm-hmm. It kind of kicked off in the beginning of May and ended at the end of October. And just not like that anymore.
No.
But I thought that, you know, this would work out pretty good. Well, the snowbirds don't come. And I was in a real thick snowbird area. Snowbirds don't come till a few come at Thanksgiving. A few come between there. Most of them come right after Christmas or after New Year. And they almost all leave before Easter. So they want to go home and have family with the Easter. They want to have, they can go home and get to see their accountant for April tax filing. So it's about a 3 or 4 month thick season. The other problem is they're not all rich, like you think. And they don't necessarily like giant barbecue sandwiches. One of the things they didn't like about me was my sandwiches were too big. But I did okay. The problem with that is it's a great idea. And I made money some weeks, some months, some seasons. But if it's raining, nobody's coming by you. If it's cold, nobody's coming by you. If it's hot, nobody's coming by you. Today, you might as well stay home. Sunday, I couldn't sell any barbecue on Sunday. That was weird.
That's weird.
Yeah, I think everybody just goes to church and they go, if they're going to go eat barbecue, they go to the sit-down restaurant or something. I don't know. I learned a lot. I took a lot of lumps in that. But at the same time, I was trying to figure out what was the next thing to do then. And because there was so much going on in barbecue, there had to be a way. So I started doing classes. The only guy that was doing them before me was in a serious fashion was Paul Kirk.
Okay.
And Paul, his winning days were long past. I was, as far as I can tell you, I was the first guy that was still winning contests and doing classes where I was telling everybody what I was doing.
Okay.
And it was pretty groundbreaking, and it was effective. You know, There's a great, we talk about it a lot. There's a class I did in Effingham, Illinois, where Mike Wozniak was there from
Oh, wow.
QAL. Darren Wirth was there. Rod Gray was there. The Shigs and Pitt guys were there. There was a handful of guys that have gone on to be very good at this that were all at that class because they were new. And I was giving up the secrets. You know, I was telling people what was happening. I was like, you know, Blues Hog was becoming a thing. And nobody was really
Oh, that's
talking
so
about it,
interesting.
you know. All of a sudden, if you paid me $200 or $300, I told you what to do with the Blues Hog.
Were you doing this across the United States or just in Illinois and Florida?
Yeah, no, I was. I did them from Oregon. I did them from Oregon, Seattle. I did them up there. I did them wherever I could find a good spot to do it, basically. I was like cutting a deal with a local guy. You know, I got the first, I think, $1,500. And then we split the money after that or something like that. So, yeah, I did. I probably should try to figure out where all I did them. I don't
Yeah,
remember.
that'll be really interesting to know.
Yeah, it was fun. And then other people started picking. I take credit for this too. I was the first guy. All of a sudden, everybody wanted to bring their spouse or their teammate. And it was like, wait a minute. So I came up with the idea of give your spouse a bargain. You know, you can bring your spouse for $100 because that just made sense to me.
Yeah, that's true. That's a smart idea.
Your wife didn't want you to go, and she wanted to go. You know, so there was, but it was, you know, I'm not bitter like I invented this stuff and everybody stole it. And it makes me feel good. I like that. You know, it's, I've always had the attitude that, you know, if you have a good idea and somebody else starts using it, just get a better idea. That's
Exactly.
okay. You know, that's how I feel about it. So I was doing that, and then
Is that when you wrote a book? Your first book?
Well, it came right about the same time. That was a guy named Bruce Ring up in Iowa. Bruce was a barbecue guy and a banker, and he started he wanted to start a magazine for whatever reason. So he knew some guy that was a magazine producer there in Iowa. So they create the Barbecuer. So Bruce was my friend. So I called him one day and I said, hey, I want to write the Ask Dr. Barbecue column. And he goes, yeah, sure. He goes, I'll pay you when I can. You know, it was one of them things were getting started. So Bruce bought me my first chef jackets, though, with flames on the collar. I wanted them. I spec them, but I didn't want to pay for them myself. So I got them with Bruce's, the barbecuer on there. I probably got them in a box
somewhere.
Oh, that's
cool.
So we started writing the Ask Dr. Barbecue column. Now, the internet was starting to happen, but it was still so new.
Yeah.
So this had to be probably 95, 96. To us, it was new. So there was a place where you could go and ask questions online, but we hardly ever got any. So we would have to make them up, basically. But it was cool. It was a nice column, and it was a really nice magazine. And Bruce was just done with it. So he sold it to Dave DeWitt. I don't know if you know Dave.
Yeah, how can I know that name?
Fiery Foods.
Okay.
He does Fiery Food Show out in Albuquerque.
Yeah, yeah.
Dave was the original editor of Chili Pepper magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went on and started Fiery Foods magazine himself. And so Dave was doing Fiery Foods at the time. So he bought the barbecue, and somebody told me, call Dave and see if he wants to do that. So I called Dave and he goes, yeah, that sounds good. So he said, I'll pay you whatever it was, a couple hundred a month or something, which was more than I'd been getting. So I was like, yeah, this is great. I'll take it. So, but Dave was good. Dave was always really active online and still is, and has a huge website. If you're into Fiery Foods,
oh, yeah.
I think it's fiery-foods.com.
I think so. I think you're right. Yeah.
And so Dave became my friend. So one day Dave calls and says, hey, listen, would you like to write a cookbook? I said, sure. I'm selling barbecue in a parking lot, not making any money. What do you, of course I do. And he said, well,
yeah, that sounds
I have this
phenomenal.
Opportunity to write a cookbook, a barbecue cookbook. This publisher, Steve Raiklin's books. This is all, man, it's fun to live back through this.
Yeah.
Steve Raiklin's books were really just starting to rock. And so another publisher wanted to do some barbecue books. So they called Dave, and Dave said, I can't really do it. I'm not really the right guy. And he was in the middle of writing the Spicy Food Lover's Bible. So he couldn't do it. And so he said, do you want this project? The thing is, you have to take the agent with the project. And I said, oh, I don't have an agent. Of course I'll take the agent. So anyway, so Dave tells me, you have to take the agent with the deal. I didn't have an agent. I'm happy to do that. So they present me with this opportunity to write the cookbook, and they really let me do it, you know, do it my way. And they really wanted three books, and I knew that. So I wrote the first one, and then they immediately signed me to do two more. And actually, Dave DeWitt co-wrote the first three books with me. People don't know that, but because I didn't know how, you know. But it turns out, and Dave tells the story to this day, that and so does Scott, my agent, that he's still my agent, that he's still Dave's agent.
Oh, that's great.
15 years later, yeah, he's just a good guy. It's been a great success. But they said, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I just couldn't say no to the deal. And but they said I was a natural, you know. But I'm being a storyteller is what I know how to do, what I like to do. But the thing was, I had lived all this stuff. You know, I tell people, writing your first cookbook's easy because you've saved up all the jokes, all the stories, all the recipes. You're ready to go.
All the anecdote, everything. Yeah,
you got, you know, 3/4 of it is the easy part. The second one's the hard one because now you have to figure out how to be a cookbook writer because the stuff's just not there in your lap ready to go. But the third one, if you write that third one, you kind of know what you're doing.
How did the first book do? Did it do well?
Yeah, it did. It did real well. It didn't do as well as Stephen's books. You know, Stephen's books, nobody's books have done as well as Stephen's book. But yeah, it did real well. I mean, it did well enough that they signed me to do two more. And I'm actually in the middle of cutting a deal to write my 10th one now. So
how amazing is that? Like, it's like, I'm not jumping ahead, but to imagine that you would have written 10 books or 9 books, now 10 books, that's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely is. I say it a lot, but it's true. When I wrote that first book, I thought I was writing a book. It never crossed my mind. I mean, they had talked about a second and third one, but I was not thinking that far ahead. Because you also got to remember, there wasn't a lot of barbecue books back then. Paul was probably on his second or third book. But Paul was a big deal in Kansas City, you know, and because of KCBS, he was the only personality in the early days. So Paul got some opportunities. So he was on his second or third book. Stephen had written his, I don't know, he was on his, you know, second or third. Mike Mills' book came out, the first one came out right about the same time as mine. And that was, you know, that was it. There wasn't a lot of books back then. And honestly, I wrote these three and we really thought, well, that's it. You know, by then, a handful of other people had written books. John Willingham had written one and, you know, there was maybe 20 legitimate barbecue cookbooks out there. We thought, well, this is over. You know, nobody's going to want us to do this anymore. How many barbecue books can you write? Okay, so regarding the cookbook, so let's go back to the first cookbook. I get this opportunity through Dave DeWitt to write this first cookbook, and I have all the old stories and stuff. So it's pretty easy to write the first cookbook. I didn't know what I was doing, but it turned out I could write. In what they told me I was really good at after I got done was writing in my own voice, that when you read the words that I'd written down, it sounded like me speaking, which is just something God-given as far as I'm concerned. I never, you know, I'd last read writing class I took, I was probably in the 10th grade. So, and then I wrote this book at 50 years old. So, or I guess it was later than that, 40, 45, 47. But anyway, it wasn't something I had worked at. And it just all of a sudden, it just kind of came natural to me. Now, don't get me wrong, you get a lot of help from editors and that sort of thing. But I take pride in writing all the work, all the words of a cookbook.
That's important.
A lot of guys don't. I understand it's a legitimate thing to have people help you with recipes and the writing and stuff. Not everybody can do it. Mm-hmm. For me, that's kind of, if I couldn't do that, why would I write a book? So I do write all the words. They design it. They edit it. It's amazing. I'll go through it multiple times trying to find the mistakes, and then another editor will go through it and another editor, and then they have the copy editors that look for every mistake, and it gets to publish and there's still mistakes. It's amazing
of course
how that could happen. But so it was a really cool learning experience. I really thought I was writing a book. They had talked about another 2-book deal right after, but I had nothing to relate that might happen. But it did, and I got to write those two more, and then I was... We thought, I think I told this story yesterday, I don't know if I'm repeating it, but whatever. We thought that's the end of it. You know, I've written 3 barbecue books. There's another 20 or so on the market, all written by the same kind of guys like me. And, you know, how many more could we possibly have? So it's time to do something different. So I wanted to write a tailgating book, and my agent in New York cold called the NFL. They said yes, amazingly. So we didn't see that coming. It was, you know, they were like, yeah, okay, we'll do that. Now, don't get me wrong, they take a good chunk of the money, but they allowed us to use NFL logos and
pictures. That's huge.
And stuff. Yeah, it was huge. It was very exciting. But so for me, that was the book that was my fourth book that I was able to break out of being just a barbecue guy. There's soup recipes in there and dip recipes and, typical
Yeah, I remember
tailgating
that
stuff
book.
along with some barbecue. So it broke me out of the just barbecue guy thing. And then by then everybody figured I kind of was pretty good at writing cookbooks. So then other opportunities would come. The same publisher offered me, they said, "Hey, we've got an idea to write a book called Ribs, Chops, Steaks, and Wings. And it'd just be those four things. And you write about a dozen recipes for each." And I did that. And it was a good book. And people liked it. And then they came and said, "Well, listen, what about every barbecue?" By now, we're up to probably a couple hundred barbecue books. Obviously, we were wrong that 20 was enough. And they said, "But all these other barbecue books are being written as hero books. I'm the god of all barbecue, and this is why you should do it this way." And certainly my first three were written like that too. And they said, "What about the beginner's guide to barbecue?" So I wrote Slow Fire, which has been my best-selling book that I've written. And still does real well because I wrote it from a relatable thing. You want to learn how to cook barbecue? Here you go.
I think that was the first book that I had gotten from you, for sure.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful book too. Of all my books, that might be the best looking book. It's really nice. Although the last one, the Big Green Egg book, is really nice too. So I stumbled into that as a career, frankly. And at 45 years old, I became an author, and now I'm up to. We're working on a deal for the 10th book. We should have it done pretty soon. It's a pretty cool idea. I can't talk about it, but it's a pretty cool idea. Like I said, by writing all these books, I sort of crossed over, and I've also taught myself to cook different things too. You can't just keep going forward with a career if you know how to cook four things.
No, for sure.
And I, you see guys fizzle out, frankly, because of that. I've worked real hard to learn how to cook other things and thrown myself into sometimes uncomfortable situations just to go forward with it,
It's it, after the four, after that third book or the fourth book, is that when people started to recognize you that weren't barbecue people? Is that sort of when you kind of crossed over? Or do you?
Well, yeah, but really the Food Network, nothing is even in the game with the Food Network for that stuff. I just looked on my Facebook page and there's a post from a friend up in Minnesota that the Cooking Channel reran an episode of Best Thing I Ever Ate from 2010, which they rerun them all the time. The Food Network, nothing compares to that, but along the way, so the way that happened, I met Guy. The story goes, so other people had started doing barbecue classes, and there was a couple named James and Lola Rice. I forget what their team name was. They've been gone for a while, but they were Texans, and they all of a sudden they showed up, and they were like Darren and Sherry. They were just winning all the big money contests for a while there. So they decided to do a cooking class, and they did it down by Dave Close at Dave's Factory. And this was a big deal at the time. So people came from all over the country, and I couldn't go for whatever reason. I don't know if it was a conflict or I was just broke. There was a dip in there from the successful trucking to these days. But whatever, I couldn't go. But a bunch of my friends went, and that's where they all met Guy Fieri. Guy showed up to learn how to cook barbecue. He had a couple restaurants, and he showed up to do this, and they all became friends. And so Guy, now I met Guy through those guys. Then they all showed up at the American Royal, and I met Guy through them. And I was pretty well, I was a big deal in the barbecue world. I was always a big deal. So probably because of him is how I first got on TV, I guess. They used to shoot these Food Network specials at the Jack and stuff, and it would just be this generic thing, and they'd include a few barbecue guys. And for whatever reason, I never got involved in any of that. And I didn't really, I was always disappointed. But then all of a sudden, I came in a different door to the Food Network, and they started using me like in different things that them other guys hadn't been in. But it all starts with Guy, man. He decides to do a tailgating show, and I get to be a judge in all the episodes. And it's a big deal. It wasn't as big a deal as it would be now, but it was still a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Prime time Food Network, and I'm one of the judges, Guy Fieri's friend, and then I was on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with him, and
Yeah, you'd think you'd pop in. I remember you popping into different restaurants, right?
Only one time.
Oh, was it just one time? Okay, well then I've seen it
Yeah,
multiple, many,
they had
many
called
times.
me. I knew that whole crew from doing the tailgate show, so they would call me to find out barbecue restaurants to go to in the early days. Now I think they have like a whole organized
Oh, I'm
catalog,
sure.
like the Smithsonian with restaurants to go to.
Yeah, they have 7 years
But
worth
back
of
then they
places.
needed a hand now and then, so they would call me, and so that's how I ended up at Smoking Guns. But I also had an agent for a while in New York. Well. It's I'm very lucky. All these things just overlap. I get a call one day from a guy in New York that's got just opened a barbecue restaurant, and I'm got it's all out of order, but
That's funny.
whatever.
That's funny.
Someday I'll sort it all out. I get a call from a guy he's opened a barbecue restaurant, and they don't know how to really cook barbecue that well, but they've got a big line out the door because it's Justin Timberlake's restaurant.
Oh, in New York?
Yes, and it was probably like October, November that he called me, and I was like, "Nah, I'm out, man," because I knew what was going to happen. He wanted me to come to New York for January to help them, and I was like, "I'm not doing that. I live in Florida." And he kept bugging me, and every, people around me were like, "Don't be stupid. You got to go do this." So I go basically spend January in New York teaching these guys how to cook barbecue, and we all became friends. And I mean, Justin wasn't involved day to day in the restaurant, but he was around. I mean, we'd see him regularly.
That's pretty
And
cool.
he claimed to know how to cook, actually.
That was Southern Hospitality, right? Was it? Yeah.
Right. And it's still there. It's still there and doing well. It's an amazing story. I mean, lasting that long, that place has got to be 10 years old.
Easily, easily,
Less than
maybe
10
more.
years in Manhattan is a huge deal. And I think they're doing real well these days. But yeah, it was so obviously that was a thing. So through that, I got an agent in New York. The people there had a bunch of friends, and they were like, "Well, you need an agent." So they shot me around. They take me to literally William Morris, and actually it was really interesting. They take me to meet this agent at William Morris, and in the next office is Guy's agent, who I know socially, and so he was there. And then we go to IMG, which is the other big agency place. Well, the guy from there was actually spinning off to open an agency to with going to take care of chefs. So I had to wait a couple months, and then I got that agent, and he was at the same time representing Aaron Sanchez and Marcus Samuelson and John Besh, and I think he still represents I think all those guys actually. It didn't work out for me. He didn't really have time for me, and it was a nice idea, but it didn't work out. But in the interim, he had every connection at the Food Network, and that's how I got on Best Thing I Ever Ate, and I did a good job with that. So that was really crossover
Do you
stuff.
remember which what was the best thing you ever ate? Which
Yeah, I did four episodes. I
Okay.
did the one they had asked me for hometown favorite,
Okay.
and I told them about a place that served Italian beef and sausage combos in Chicago
Okay.
that I'd literally been going to since the 70s when I was in the trucking business. There was a place to park my truck there, and they had good sandwiches, and I went there for years, called Joe Boston's, and they just closed last year. Well, he sold the building and tore it down, but he had a good run at the end, very heavily based on that show. It's amazing the impact that stuff has. But anyway, so that they switched that at the last second to Meat Fest because it was a big meaty sausage and beef combo. And I did the spicy food show where we went to St. Elmo's in Indianapolis and ate the shrimp cocktail. That place I went, there's a place in Albuquerque I really like, El Modelo. They have a chicken and green chili burrito. It's just big and it's just great. And we tried to go there and they said no, which always amazes me that any restaurant would say no. But I think they're very protective of their recipes. It's disruptive to the restaurant.
Oh,
They
yeah.
got to.
No, I know restaurants that have said no to Guy.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if they wish they'd have done that or not.
I think they do. I think they wish they had done
Yeah, I think most of them are probably sorry they didn't, but whatever. It's a choice you make.
it.
And so that was the spicy food one. And I did, what was it called? Road Trip Food or something. And I was doing the classes at the Greenbrier up in West Virginia at the time,
Oh,
which is
yeah.
the fancy resort. And they had a lobster mashed potato dish on the menu, and it was phenomenal. So that was my road trip food place. And actually, they didn't send me back up there to do it. Rich Rosendale did it, who was Rich is a certified master chef and was the chef at
Right.
the Greenbrier at the time, and was the Bocuse d'Or candidate for U.S. I mean, he's a big deal, and he did that. And I'm trying to think, what was the fourth one now? I can't remember. I don't remember, but
Okay.
there's a
I'll
fourth
try
one
to,
out
if
there.
I can find them, I'll put links in the show notes. That way people can
Yeah,
search.
there's a couple of videos, and all the videos aren't out there, but some of the videos are. But that was a huge deal. And again, still is. They still play it. I mean, I still get people recognize me all the time. And again, it was crossover. It wasn't bar. Oh, I know. The fourth one was Smoked, I think it was. And we went to Big Bob Gibson's and ate the turkey.
Oh, wow.
So that was actually barbecue. But it was another thing that got me out of just that barbecue world, you know.
And it was a familiar face and a familiar
yeah,
person.
Some of it was intentional. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. Nobody's ever called me. I always did joke. Nobody's called me for Salad Fest. I think that was a line I said in that show. You know, it's always going to be meaty dude kind of stuff.
Yes, for
but,
sure.
But it got me out of that box of being just the barbecue guy. And and that helped a lot. And then, you know, from then I got on Chopped. As a the first season of Chopped Grill Masters, and beat that snobby guy from New York. I don't know if you remember that.
I do. Gala.
You know, so all of a sudden I was, you know, whether it was intentional or not, it's interesting to look back at now. I was trying to learn how to cook other things, but it was genuine. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't just I have to learn how to do this. I genuinely was interested. I always say that barbecue just happened for me because it was just such a good fit. You know, I was in my 20s and I was a partying young dude and I could cook and party at the same time, cooking barbecue. If there was, I always say if there was a, I love to cook chicken soup, probably my favorite thing to cook.
Wow.
If there was a chicken soup cooking contest in the parking lot where you drank a bunch of beer, that might be who I am, you know? So it's funny how barbecue just was such a good fit for me. You know?
Could see you on the Beat Bobby Flay chicken soup episode, baby.
I've got chicken ass. I'm ready.
That's so funny. So you have the momentum from the books, you have the Food Network, and then do you, along the way, are sponsors coming to you? Because I'm sure on like when you're on the competition tour, you had sponsorship, but then because now I know that you fly out to a bunch of different places too, for festivals.
Now,
is that something that they contact you a year in advance and say, hey, we'd like you to come out, or is that just part of maybe with a sponsor?
It's a great mix of things. It starts with Big Green Egg. I was trying to go, you know, we go back to the unsuccessful selling in the parking lot. I was still doing it, but I knew I needed to do something different. I wasn't going to support the lifestyle I wanted. And so I was trying to figure out different things. And I had a friend, Nick Nicholas, in Lakeland there. And it was in the grill business. He had a big store, but he also was a rep for some grill companies and stuff. And he said, well, you know, these grill companies really need to hire guys like you to cook at events and shows and give them recipes and stuff. And online was becoming a thing. And so Nick and I, in his living room, cooked up this idea that I should be a spokesman for the grill industry. And so he connected me with Napoleon Grills out of Canada.
Okay.
And they're really good guys. And I did. I went to the Hearth and Patio show and cooked a bunch of food for them. And there was a smaller show we used to do, the BioLab show. It was like a buying group thing. And I went and did that. And they liked me a lot. But it was a gas grill. They had a charcoal grill, too. But it was a gas grill. It wasn't a great fit.
Yeah.
They also worked with Ted Reeder up there a lot. And he was the Canadian guy. And, you know, it was okay. But it wasn't anything great. But one of those shows, I was set up next to the Big Green Egg guys. And I don't know if you were around in the early days of the barbecue forums. I was the tormentor of Big Green Eggs. I was the anti-Green Egg guy. I used to call them egg holes and egg offs. And all of a sudden, I'm standing next to these guys, and they're nice guys. So one of the guys from Big Green Egg Canada, Brian, brings over a chicken wing. And those guys, they laughed. They were like scared of me. And I was right. I mean, I was butted up to them cooking on this Napoleon. And they came over and brought me a chicken wing and said hi, and we became friends. And Jim Newfer, who was the guy running Big Green Egg at the time, followed up with me, and I followed up with him. And he said, well, come on by. Well, you know, we'll give you a green egg. And so they gave me one, and I carried it around for a while and cooked some chicken on it I was still doing a lot of competing. And so then I went back to him, and I said, you know, this is pretty good. I like this thing. You know, well, what else can we do? So they started suggesting to dealers and distributors that they use me for events, that I was their guy. So this is, I mean, nobody else was doing this at the time. I know it sounds pretty braggadocio to say,
no, but it's
but
true.
Damn it, we did, man. You know, it was, so they said, the distributor in Evansville, Indiana, Bass Myers, they want to do an event in Kentucky, a barbecue cook-off. Would you go there and cook and be their representative? And I said, yes. If we're going to do it, though, I said, tell them to bring 4 eggs, and I'll cook the whole contest on green eggs. And nobody had ever cooked a whole barbecue contest on Big Green Eggs at the time. Went there, and and won the contest. And all the big hitters of the day were there. It was a pretty big deal contest. And I was grand champ that day.
That's cooking fantastic. On
4 eggs. And actually, the trophy is right here. This is the trophy.
That is awesome.
It's 2003 Barbecue Cook-Off in Oldham County, Kentucky.
That is
it. That's a Louisville Slugger, obviously.
Yeah, so that's killer.
We had a few of those made. That's the original. There's one at Big Green Egg, and the distributor has one as well. Now I had gone and immediately we sold like 11 eggs on the spot because all the competition guys in general have all got a few bucks in their pocket. And we had demo eggs. We literally sold them, a bunch of them, to the comp guys and the people that were wandering around. It was really, we still laugh about it because it was the really coming out party for Big Green Eggs of the, in the competition.
Within that world,
So now I was qualified for the Jack in 2003. Cook it on the Big Green Egg. So, you know, they took all those eggs back and left me just with my medium one. And I said, well, if you guys want me to cook at the Jack on all eggs, I will, but I'm not doing it unless we can enter into a deal to go forward working together. And literally at the 11th hour, they started paying me monthly in fall of 2003. So I guess this year it'll be 15 years that they, probably in spring, it's about 15 years now that all that first part of that story happened.
That's phenomenal.
We've been friends ever since, and I still work for them. I'm still their spoke chef. Now they do all the fancy in-store point-of-sale stuff, and you see me on that. We've both come a long way together. So to me, that's where sponsorships begins. And because of that and TV, you know, being the Big Green Egg spokesman is a high-profile thing. Don't misunderstand, you know. I do have a problem with a lot of you brought up sponsorships a couple of times. What I see out there in the competition world now, I don't consider sponsorships. If somebody gives me a free brisket, they're just my friend. That's not a sponsor. Sponsors write you checks as far as I'm concerned. I know there's some good
ones.
That's
a good point.
Now too, but I think guys, they want to be sponsored so bad that they all wear a Yeti hat and a Smithfield shirt. And they may, I'm not sure they got anything for that, and I don't think that's smart.
There should be some logic behind it, and there should be if you want to make it turn it into a living, it's something that you should do for a check. Right. Like you're saying. That makes sense.
Well, it circled back to the beginning. I was talking about that. I think the business sense is more important than knowing how to cook. You know, I haven't won. Well, I did win two contests in 2011. That's the last time I cooked seriously at all. But I don't have to win any more contests. You know, I've done that. I've done all these other things now. You got to keep going forward. You know, winning a bunch of contests is great, but there's a bunch of guys. I mean, can you find a barbecue restaurant that doesn't claim to have won a bunch of championships anymore? You know, it's just kind of.
I saw one on the Food Network last night. So.
Yeah, I mean, they're everywhere, and it's legitimate they have because there's so many contests out there. I think sponsorships, you have to don't give up the milk, you know, don't make them buy the cow my suggestion to people. We can't all work for free because then they don't have to pay anybody.
Exactly. And they get used
to
it. Yeah.
Free, I don't necessarily mean zero money. I mean short money. You know, we have to realize we have value and people need to pay for it. If you want me to be representing your product, I like the product and I want to do it, but I also got to pay my rent. So I need to get paid to do that.
Make a living for what you're doing. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think guys are so eager to be sponsored that they you know, consider themselves sponsored. And again, a free brisket is not a sponsor to me.
No.
But it is to a lot of people. And I guess if you're, you know, if it's your hobby and somebody wants to give you a free brisket, what the heck, take it. But I just, it's hard to get to that next level if you're working for briskets.
I agree. Well, tell me about your restaurant. I'm curious about that. That's what's happening with that.
Well, so the only other restaurant I've ever been involved with was Southern Hospitality. And I didn't work in the kitchen there. I was really a consultant. My name was on the menu that I'd done it. And it was marketing is what as it's evolved, that's what I've gotten to be good at. I know how to cook too, don't get me wrong, but the marketing part of it is the part I've gotten good at. And so that was the only restaurant I was involved in. I know better. I really don't want to do that. I just see it as a dangerous thing financially and a lot of work. I'm getting a little old for that kind of work. And frankly, I'm lucky. I've got cushy things I get to go do, you know? And but then these folks called me. There's a restaurant over in Tampa called Dats, Datz. And I know the restaurant. It's a big, busy restaurant, really cool place. They do all kinds of fun stuff. They have the burger with the two buns made out of giant mac and cheese, fried mac and cheese pans. And they do, you know, they do everything fun like that. They never stop looking at what's new and changing it. They got the sign out front that they change every week and, you know, stuff like that. It's really good, fun restaurant, busy part of town. And so anyway, I've known these folks for years, and they called me one day and said, "Hey, we're thinking about opening a barbecue restaurant." It turns out their son was going to college at Texas A&M, and they're in Texas all the time eating barbecue and thinking, "Well, this is fun. How come there's not this happening over by us?" And Tampa and St. Pete are across the bay from each other. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it,
A
but
little bit, yeah.
St. Pete is booming right now. It's just so much going on. Tampa is too. But they wanted to have some presence over here in St. Pete, and they said, "You know, a barbecue restaurant in St. Pete would be a great fit, but we want some purpose for this barbecue restaurant." So they called me, and I'd known them just socially, and they said, "You know, you want to be involved in this?" And I said, "Yeah, with you, I would do that because I know they know how to run restaurants. They're going to run it right. I get to just be me and do what I do." So that was the genesis of it. And so we started looking at buildings, and one thing led to another, and they finally found a building that they bought, which is great. I couldn't ask. If I'd have asked for a great location, I'd have never asked them for anything this good. You know, they went to ground zero and said, "What about that big gray building? Let's get that one." And they did it and bought the parking lot next door because the neighborhood is tough on parking. So they bought the parking
Oh,
lot.
that's
So
so
I
smart.
couldn't ask for a sweeter situation. The problem is all of this has delayed and delayed and delayed. We finally have our permits in hand, I believe this week. And if it didn't happen already, they've trenched out the ground for the plumbing and all the electric, and it was in, and I believe the concrete was getting filled in, and now the build out will start. But it's a when it's done, it's 9,000 square feet, which
Wow,
is a
that's
huge restaurant,
good size.
and it's gutted right now. So every piece of electric, every piece of plumbing, every piece of equipment, every wall has got to be built. So we got a long way to go. We probably got another 3, 4 months, but it's going to be a big deal.
What's the menu going to look like?
Well, it'll be barbecue for sure, but we're looking at all these cool. I just was looking at one in San Francisco called International Smoke. I think it's just internationalsmoke.com. Aisha Curry's involved and Michael Mina, and they've opened this grill,
Oh, I
fire
think I've
and
heard about this,
grilling.
yeah.
What's that?
I
Have you heard
think,
about it?
yeah.
I had till the other day somebody showed it to me. I'm actually going to San Francisco Thursday. I'm going to try to get there, but they're only open for dinner, and I got to go up to Santa Rosa, so I'm not sure I'm going to make it. But they're cooking everything over fire, and like Asian this and Filipino that, and I mean, if you look at the menu, it's like it couldn't be any more diverse. It's really impressive. We won't be quite that diverse. We don't. That's not who we are. You know, we're gonna have real barbecue. We hired a guy from Kreitz Market to come and be our pit master.
Oh wow. Hey, that's
A
something
young guy
that's
that. Yeah, it's a commitment. He, unfortunately, we brought him a year too early. He's already been here for a year working at the other restaurant, but he's ready to go. We bought a giant oiler. You know, we're gonna cook some real Texas
Are you
briskets,
gonna be making your own sausage? Do that?
and you know, we're on the fence about that. We'd like
That's always a
to.
tough call.
It's a big commitment to space. You know, think about the 9,000 square foot restaurant. This is a big, busy restaurant. One of the things we talked about was making our own bacon. And Roger said, you know, he talked to a guy that has 1,000 pounds of bacon on hand at any given time because it's in the process. And if you're a busy restaurant, so think about where do you keep 1,000 pounds of bacon? So sausage would be a whole nother commitment too. The other thing is there's a lot of really good sausage available. You know, McKeska, I think, didn't you mention Tim?
Oh
Some
yeah.
Tim McKeska's is a
He'd be a
famous
perfect.
barbecue
That'd be a.
family. Right. But also Kreitz sells
Oh
barbecue
yeah.
sausage,
Those guys, yeah.
Southside in Elgin, Southside and Myers, both
Both
famous
those
sausage
guys, yeah.
places. Rudy's will sell you their sausage. I mean, there's, you know, and on and on and on. So there's a lot of really good Texas sausage available. And frankly, it's not that hard to get it here to Florida. So it's pretty hard. That one, I doubt that we will do that. But we're going to make our own pastrami. I think what we
That's
might do with
cool.
bacon is try buy bacon, but then re-season it, you know, kind of let it hang around with some flavored things like that. get to eliminate that 1,000 pounds of bacon on hand. You know, you
Yeah,
don't think
that's just,
about
that
it,
sounds
but
just like so scary.
yeah, there's nothing to it when you've got a little restaurant and you got to do four slabs of bacon, but when you got to do 1,000 pounds of bacon, man, that's a pretty big commitment.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's really cool. Well, so just to wrap it up, because we could probably talk for 2 more hours and extremely. What do people need to know about you now, or what are things they might not know? Like, what's your schedule look like?
What am I doing? Well, I'm trying to stay home to work on the restaurant, frankly. But I'm going to the Fiery Food Show in Albuquerque. Dave, it's their 30 or 35th anniversary, and Dave is still my friend and certainly a big mentor. So I'm going to go out there. Where else am I going? Well, we got it's kind of show season in my world. The Hearth Barbecue Patio
Oh, yeah.
Association show is coming up. That's a big deal. I got to go there in Nashville. The National Barbecue Association show. I'm not sure I'm going. I think I am. I'll probably be there though. It's just that time of year for that kind of stuff. The National Restaurant Show coming up in May. Got to start working on that. I'm working with a client that maybe I'll be there doing some kind of representing. If not, we'll be certainly getting ready to open our restaurant or opened it. And
That's true.
hey,
It's
you're always
all coming
looking for
together
new
right now.
stuff. Yeah. And we're always going places, you know, like I said, the San Francisco restaurant. I don't know that I can get there this week, but man, this is an important restaurant. I want to get there and check it out. I got a TV thing I'm working on. It's that time of year where I try to stay at my desk. I'm working on a cookbook deal, so it's a whole bunch of wheeling and dealing right now. And this is the time to get it all done so that we can do it all from basically from March on, all hell breaks
Yeah,
loose.
it becomes crazy. Yeah, and especially then the whole barbecue season, I guess you would say this becomes.
Yeah, it really does. It's weird though. I mean, I'm so not involved like in the competition world anymore, and I miss it. But frankly, it's different than it used to be, and it's hard to be involved casually. You know, the guys that are into it now are so into it, and but also one of the things, and this is mean to say, but the creativity's all been washed out of it. You know, I mean, when we were doing it back in the day, we made our own rubs, we made our own sauces, we're experimenting constantly with stuff. It's just not how it is anymore.
Do you ever get out to Los Angeles?
Once in a while, yeah. I you never know where I'm gonna show up. If somebody wants me somewhere, I do. So yeah, I haven't been there lately, but I do get there. I think I'm coming out to San Diego for the Egg Fest, so I might. I know you guys in L.A. and San Diego think it's a long way apart.
It's not
I
that
don't think it's
bad.
that far,
No,
so I may
I went to
drive
school
up.
in San Diego. It's not that bad.
I got some friends down there, and it's just so nice down there. So I may come up to LA. I got some friends up there too. So I, you know, while I'm in San Diego, I may sneak up. I think that's in like May, I believe.
Well, if you're ever here, I'd definitely like to take you out to lunch. Well,
Yeah, my buddy Kevin Roberts just opened a Paleo Grill.
where's this?
That's the name of the restaurant. It was a good idea actually, because it's such a big thing right
Yeah.
now. Instead of going in and saying, "Do you have any paleo on your menu?" he said, "I'm just having the Paleo Grill."
Well,
So
I'll have to check that out. Where is that? Do you know?
somewhere around L.A., I don't know
Okay.
what part,
Yeah, I'll check it out.
but
Well,
he's got a bunch of restaurants there, right, where I assume they're all in the same part of town.
excellent. We'll have to check it out. Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate your time, and thanks for reconnecting again today. I do appreciate
Yeah, sorry about that. My PC's getting old. It gets tired after a while.
Well, no. Well, thank you so much, and yeah, you have a great week, and let's stay in contact.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. Let me know when you put it up.
I will for sure. You take care.
Okay, see you, man.